Record. All right, good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Sharon Feng, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Sharon is Director of Science and Technology in Global Analytical Science at PPG. So this interview is an element of IRI's digitalization community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. So through the DXC, you can access case studies and white papers with fresh, relevant content, a virtual conference dedicated to digitalization, that's Digital Futures, and that'll be October 11th through the 13th, fingers crossed, in Cleveland, Ohio, facilitate roundtable discussions on key topics, updates with insights and additional resources, and webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the third Thursday of the month. I'll be sure to sign all of you up for updates if you're not already on the mailing list. And if you don't want to receive updates, just let me know. A few housekeeping items to get through before we start the conversation with Sharon. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can either type your question in to the chat and I'll read it out for you, or you can jump in and do it kind of face to face and turn your camera on and have a conversation. Either way is good. So whatever your preference is. Right. So let's go ahead and get started. Sharon, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate you.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah.
Right. So tell us where you sit at PPG and how all this works.
Yeah. So you have already talked. Read out my title. So I report to the CTO, David Bem. And among various things I do, there are two major and larger pieces. One is I do lead the R&D Center in Allison Park, Pennsylvania. This is our global R&D Center. Right now, one and only, we're truly fundamental science research for disruptive technology development is done. So that's about, give or take, 350 scientists on site to really develop these technology solutions for our customer and support our organic growth. And then the other part, whether you call it a day job or a night job, I'm very excited about is I did get a chance to lead the digital transformation effort in the science, global science technology organization. So I guess that's why we're talking about here today.
Yeah, we're going to hit on that just a little bit.
Okay.
So can you share more about the mission and main focus at the flagship R&D center so we can get a good feel for it?
Sure, of course. So PPG has been historically, when we grew up, quote unquote, gone through a large series numbers of acquisitions. So we grow up sort of inorganically over a decade, then go from give or take $5 billion company to today we're around $17 billion, depending on how you count it. But you know, that strategy has been really successful. That by the time you get large enough, there's only so much you can do with that same strategy. A, you run into antitrust issues everywhere you go, and B, really, it's not sustainable. So I think PPG has started as a company try to really transform into focusing on organic growth, which has been a couple of years, not that long, actually. So as you know, organic growth really relies on bringing those technology solutions to the not only to the market we serve, but also to adjacent market we currently do not serve. Even more, there are disruptive solutions to the market we don't even know today existed, right? I mean, just like we never know we had an iPhone market probably 20 years back. So the organic growth certainly will really needs to rely on innovation. And so that's why the R&D center that works on these much larger technology platform or disruptive solutions is very essential to contribute to support the aggressive organic growth of the company. So that's what we do day in, day out. We will certainly analyze, understand the mega trends that's going to come to all of us. And then also listen to our customers in market we serve or we don't yet to serve, let's say, to see what kind of unmet needs that's out there that PPG can bring solutions to them. And that's what we do day in, day out in this R&D center. And we're going to touch upon, then very soon you come to the question, how do I do that not only effectively, but efficiently? So that's where the digital comes into play. Yeah.
All right. So when we talked before, you told me about PPG's Fast Forward initiative. Can you tell us what that is and how it relates to your mission at the R&D, center?
Yeah, so PPG Fast Forward is an initiative. Now it's probably 4 years young, I would say. That's another facet that the company needs to kind of grow up, right? When we grow up inorganically, we have so many companies coming into the big happy family. As much as we try to do the best job, we can't integrate them. There are still a lots of pockets of silos. I mean, we have numerous, you know, enterprise systems we work with, ranging from Oracle to SAP, anything in between. And then for even for science and technology, every entities we acquire over the time have their own ways, have their LIMS system, how do they capture data? How do they collaborate? So how do you really moving forward make this tapestry of all these entities, which is great, that diversity is great, but how do you integrate them even further to get all the efficiencies out of it so we can all march in the lockstep towards the common goals we have? We realize that just using the legacy systems, whenever the system we have, is probably not sufficient. So we started thinking, what could get PPG to the next level of growth? And digitization is one of the solutions, of course, not the only solution that everybody bought on to say, well, we have now these technology, these tools enables long distance collaboration, enables efficient transactions, enables unprecedented customer experience. So this is how we can get to the next level. So that's why PPG started this initiative called PPG Fast Forward. And they really have three components. The first one will be really relevant to topic here is called end-to-end digitization. So really goes all the way from we procure raw materials to coming into making our product, the shipping out, give the customer, follow their lifespans in the field, all the way around. Digitization or digital transformation, if you will really help us to gain the maximum efficiency, but also do our job to serve our customer much better. That's the first pillar. The second pillar is related to digitization, specifically to sales, so called a selling machine. Okay, so the third pillar is actually cultural related. They are all kind of tied together. It's called a new way of working, because you can put all the tools you want for digitization, spend enough money, if the people are not really adapting them, use them supposed to be, it's not going to get whatever the benefit you get. So encourage the entire organization to think about new way of working is the third pillar. So that's what the PPG Fast Forward has been ongoing for 4 years. So we are still very early in this journey. I really don't know, I can call myself a thought leader, but at least we travel this journey, we learn that time. So I certainly don't mind to share with everybody what we have learned.
Awesome. And you're definitely a thought leader, Sharon. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. So what's your vision for digital transformation in the R&D function specifically? And, you know, what's the main difference that you have from the traditional R&D approach that you were taking, you know, 5 years ago?
Yeah. Good. That's a wonderful question. We thought about that a lot, right? Let's be really blunt. This initiative requires a lot of commitment to the funding, the investment, right? So what what are we trying to do once we come out at the other end? What kind of value will add to the company? So to me, especially for R&D, we're looking for two major areas that the digitization, the digital transformation will help us. One area I call them to really make our innovation process efficient. Efficient in the way shrinking the time to market. Our project, especially some of the longer term projects, still takes a long time to develop. And the cycle time of the world has changed on us. You see how fast the cell phones are changing, how fast all different technologies are changing. If the R&D is the R&D of yesterday, usually it's normal to have a project that has a 5-year lifespan to have a product coming out. So how do we do faster? So I remember a conversation with our CEO when he comes to our side to do town hall. I'm like, Michael McGarry, what is one thing you want to say to our scientists here to support our company's growth? He said, speed. Sharon, speed. I want you guys to develop new product, new technology much, much faster. And it's not a piling on more body thing. So how do we use tools technology to improve speed of innovation, efficiency? That's one. The second one is a little bit sort of aloof, is hard to really put our hands around, is to find that discovery or invention outside our thinking box. We have lots of experts. Any R&D organization has lots of experts. I think they have deep wells of knowledge, know what they know, but they don't know what they don't know. So we innovate always in that box. If I am a polymer chemist, I do epoxy polymer for all my life. I can tell you everything about epoxy polymer. I have lots of idea how to operate in that box I have experience with. But usually I call them, we operate around local minimal. We don't operate on a space that completely out of my box. But sometimes discover the disruptive ones coming from that space that's not in your box. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping to use a digital tool, especially machine learning type, to bring us out of the box we are operating all the time, to explore the space that can bring us really surprising discoveries. So those are the twofold I was looking for, and for digitization or digital transformation, yeah.
Super easy, not a problem at all. So what are the challenges that you've discovered on this journey over the last 4 years then?
Yeah, so interesting enough, a lot of people think this journey is all about tools, about all these algorithm, fancy, shining toys, right? Actually, our challenge came from twofold. I would talk about one is more people related, one is more data related. So I'm sure like everybody on the call, almost people like PPG operated in coding's world for give or take 50 years, let's say. And we test every coding we ever saw this world with large chunks of data on how it performs, what polymers go to it, what's the structure property relationship. So when I came into this, I'm like, wow, data science, piece of cake. I have all the data you want. I'm sitting on the gold mine of data, right? We all thought about that. Well, what we really start digging to find out is that gold mine is not really mineable, no pun intended, because, I mean, one to do with our legacy, we grow up from so many different entities coming into PPG family. Everybody, like I said, have a different way of capture data. Everybody have a different way of recording data, ranging from a piece of paper to a spreadsheet, a PDF on my USB file, whatever. So you can imagine that globally we have over 100 labs to try to chase that the data mine. It's not really as simple as anybody who can even imagine. But the way we keep data and then the completely non-inconsistency of the way we capture or keep data aside, once we dig into it, we also find two very interesting challenges. One is those data are not linked or not connected. They're sort of a data by itself. I'll give you an example. So we test our codings for automotive, put the panel in Florida real time for 2 years, right? We want to say if this coding is fake. That's why our car coding never fade anymore. You take the car to the junkyard, the coding looks shining and like new, right? But oh, that's yeah. what we do. We put on the Florida panel, we put out for 2 years, we came back and says, oh, this is not good, this coding is faded, this one doesn't. We have tons of these data over 50 years. But then there is not enough connection to say that panel is related to this formulation at one given time and this polymer even further back in. Because along the 4 year, 2 years, the panel is sitting on the Florida, laboratory change, people change, things start happening. So that particular data point doesn't really have context anymore. So that is one thing we face, and we didn't realize that before we got in. The other thing is even almost comical. When we look at even some of the data set that is there, was fortunate enough to be coherent, complete. And we found out is we don't have enough negative data because people don't keep the data that indicates failures. They only keep the good data. Now, it works, okay? Yeah. Everything is notebook works. Well, what about the ones that doesn't work? Well, who cares, right? So historically, they don't keep negative data, but you know, I'm sure there are data scientists, I know two of ours on call, will tell you, you need almost as much okays, which is good data, as much or not okays. That's how the model can be trained. If the model can only be trained on the okays, they don't know how to tell non-okays, right? I mean, they never see a non-okay. How would they know what non-okay look like? So historically, that was not the emphasis for data capturing. I would venture to say in any R&D. So data is a huge, huge challenge. So for some of the project that we do, just give you an example, if that's an 8 months project, 6 months is on curating, finding the data, and only 2 months on training the model and algorithm. So the data science side is actually much easier once you had the data. Mm. And to find that data is the biggest challenge. So that's a sort of hardware related, I call challenge. Then of course you come to people, right? We all grow up, myself as trained as chemists or some of us chem engineers. I mean, we do statistic analysis, DOEs, that was the extent of what do with data analysis, right? Now all of a sudden you're asking to look at the data such a different way completely. So the competency and the skill levels needs to be raised or trained or to developed. So, but before we even go there, people don't even appreciate, like, what do I do with a algorithm, you tell me. So especially talk about the senior managers, right? You have to go present it to executive committee why you should care. And so the entire people side, the cultural thing is another challenge we've been facing every day. You can only hire so many data scientists. Right. So yeah. Out of just giving proportion, our 400 plus people, we have like 6 data scientists. You can't possibly hire another 400 data scientists. So how do you bring the rest of the current R&D workforce with us on this journey? It is another challenge we're all facing. Yeah.
Definitely. And I'm sure you're not the only one on this call.
I would love to hear other people's ideas how to deal with this.
Yeah, maybe we could get some others to share at the end. So I know we're talking a lot about data, but it's a huge issue. So, you know, PPG is 140 years old. You've brought in all these other organizations. How are you handling all of the data from the before times? You know, how are you integrating this if you're doing it at all? It seems like an insurmountable task.
It is almost insurmountable. So I think this is a topic I have met a lot of other organizations, thought leaders to deal with what we're going to do on these historical data. I think recently, maybe over the last 12 months or so, I've been to a couple of conferences. The topic actually moved towards maybe we should just cut our losses. The amount of resources to digest, to curate historical data it is not even imaginable. So if we spend that kind of resource to generate the data, right? To generate the data, start from scratch, that's something maybe is much more time-wise, it's much more efficient, but also return is higher. That was the thought. I mean, I'm not sure that it is absolutely 100% sure, but with the availability of high throughput testing, high throughput formulation, if you have a problem you want to solve, and you can conceptualize a set of data that you need to train the model, it's probably is just as efficient to go just generate that data. That is, I think the thoughts are moving towards that direction. Now people are completely willing to let go of their gold mine. But I think it's just, that's a very, very difficult task to do. The other thing is what we're doing right now is start from today. Let's no longer breeding the data like we used to be historically. So we are launching a global LIMS system, which everybody will use to capture their data with the right architect, right structure. All these data will be all put into the Delta Lake, that's our cloud database, and in a certain disciplined way. So in the future, we don't have to spend 80% of time curating data, only 20% of time truly develop a solution. So we are launching that all over the globe. Let's say, let's capture the data the right way from here on. If we cut the loss of the past, let's not keep breathing the data in that historical fashion. So we're trying to do as fast as we can to launch this electronic LIMS system so everybody can capture the data the right way. But that's about all I can think of right now to how to do with that gold mine that's out there with all the data that's not discrete, not mindable, not searchable. You know?
So how did you talk about, you know, doing everything the right way, you know, storing all that data going forward. How did you come to agreement on what the right way was? Because I've heard from a lot of members, and they're just like, it's becoming debates, people are getting angry.
So, yeah.
How did you make that
decision? I can say first, there's no agreement of anything. Everybody still have their own ideas how to do this thing the best way, but ultimately that is an executive decision, right? We certainly couldn't debate until whatever comes home, and we still let all the data every day go by, goes into something we couldn't use. So you got to pick, doesn't matter what solution you pick. We pick one particular product to launch as our LIMS system globally. I'm sure there's a lot of flaws in it. Nothing you pick will be perfect, but imperfect, consistent system is better than no system at all. So we just basically said, let's use, so there's two actually, that relates to the two cultural challenges I wanted to address. One is, what is agile mean? So today, for scientists like us who grow up wanted to make sure everything's perfect, right? Everything's I's dotted, T's crossed, otherwise I'm not going to let this thing out of my sight. I can still working on it, the last 2% improvement. Agile is not that way. Agile is to launch a product, a solution, a system, whatever it is, that has minimal viability. Just do maybe 60% what you want to do. You can go argue the rest of 40% next 50 years, that's fine. But at least we have a minimal viable system out there and launch it, even though it's not perfect, we can continue to improve it. So that is, to a lot of scientists, this is hard. This is really hard. So when they first launched, they were like, oh, this system is so crappy, cannot do this, cannot do that. You know, hey guys, this is MVP. Do you know what MVP is? So it is, we're learning to really accept a solution at the beginning, which much less than perfect, not only, you know. So that's a cultural change, absolutely, right? So yeah, the second thing is coming back to let's all agree on one direction we go, and then we can always pivot. That's another thing, is you don't need to set next 15 years of roadmap. on this thing, because technology is going to change, things we don't know is going to happen. So agility, be able to pivot as changes needed, is one of those new skill set all of us have to master. So that's interesting cultural implications.
Definitely. And you know, one of your PPG colleagues has chimed in, Denise Callahan, on the topic of data. So she says, we've also focused on some of the key historical detail per acquisition so that there's some historical info that's reviewable slash findable. These historical records are maintained and absorbed in systems like technical reports.
Exactly. Denise,
the whole team initiative.
No. Denise is the keeper of all our historical documents. That's still gold mine, Denise. I didn't mean we don't need to go there at all. And there are a lot of them, if you do it right, could still be digested and shared and used. But it's just, it's a monumental task, let's put that way.
Huge. So you touched on this a bit a moment ago, but can you go into a bit more depth on the staff's reaction to the Fast Forward initiative and how you're bringing everyone along?
Yeah, so I think on the big picture level, everybody know why company has to do this, right? They got it. They got the why. But again, in terms of when it gets down to the level we're talking about here, change, right? It changed the way you do your work. It changed the way you think about these things. It changed the focus. All of a sudden, all these new flashing data science projects have become the new favorite. These are all the sort of journey we have to travel through together to get to the other side. So we thought about how much a small team of data scientists to start with, there are two of them here actually today, can truly influence change in a larger organization. Our global science technology organization, give or take about 4,000 people. So how does the a dozen change 4,000, right? So what the creativity of this team come up, I think we just started, we don't know if it's going to work, just don't quote me on this, is we're going to launch what we call a citizen data scientist initiative. So we wanted to tell everybody can be a data scientist if you wanted to. So we kind of borrowed approaches of Six Sigma. You have the black belt, the yellow belt, the green belt. You may wear a different color of belt as a data scientist, but everybody can do it. It's really not that complicated. So it's easy said to done, so that the teams constructed some interesting training modules. So if you are executive, you are just business person, all you wanted to learn or know how to appreciate is the result of these data science project outcomes. What does that mean? How does that impact my business? How does it impact my workflow? Then you have a set of training you can go through, just even get your acronyms correct, right? When people all of a sudden talk about natural or language or in a forest, whatever it is, I still don't get those jargons. But anyway, at least you know the language and you know how to look at these data to get what you want out of it. That doesn't make you a bona fide data scientist. So you may actually have a yellow belt. And for those people who are inherently curious, wanted to learn more, a little more in this area, they can go to the next set of trainings, both externally, internally, but more often, they also, more important, they also can get to work on some project because you learn by doing it. And then you can have, I don't know what percentage of our technical staff will have the green belt, but it follows their own passion, we're not gonna force it, and follows how the natural evolution when they get involved in the project. So they will have ability to become a citizen data scientists, then of course you always have the black belts out there that wants to be jumping 4 feet, you know, wanted to do data science to whatever, that's possible too. So we wanted, well, our hope is we just started this year, and our hope is over the time, we're going to bring more and more of the organization with us as they learn more about this approach and appreciate more.
That's awesome. So we're going to open the floor to questions in a moment here. But before we do, I've just got one last one. So based on what you've learned over the last 4 years, you know, what recommendations do you have for everyone out there?
The only thing I really hope that we went down earlier is hire a data architect. There is actually such a thing. This is a title. There's a data architect, just like the architect of a house. That is a very special skill that you can think ahead strategically, how to organize, how to structure my data, in what format, how does that kept all together or separate or whatever. I think if I look back, I would hire a person like that in day one. And this is not something you can just muddy through. It's really, there's actually, I didn't even know there was a field like that existed, to be honest. So if you can, and or you can send one of your own to go back to school, learn whenever to be a data architect. And that strategic investment and the start from a high level to really think through moving forward, how you deal with data, really will makes or breaks whether the future data science initiative can work or not.
Good tip. Awesome. All right. So what questions do you guys have for Sharon? We've got a few minutes left here. Feel free to unmute yourself and put your camera on and jump in, or you can type it into the chat.
Maybe I'll put everybody to sleep by now.
Oh, I doubt that. Come on now. I think you've overwhelmed them. They're on Indeed looking for data scientists. data architects.
Architect, yeah. They're hard to find.
Oh, I imagine so.
Is anybody typing something? Laura, you turn on your camera, that means you have a question.
I'll get us started, yes. Great chat, Sharon. I guess, you know, what I was thinking is on that challenge of getting our scientists and engineers to really embrace it. What has worked for you related to, like, you know, who are the best candidates that will want to get trained and would want to get used? Have you, you know, are you kind of volunteer people to get, more expert on it? Or, yeah, you know, how are you doing that?
Yeah. So actually, I think there are twofold to develop that cohort. One is natural selection. I would say there will be always naturally, there's a group of people who are more not afraid of the tech or algorithm or coding or whatever, and they're more inherently curious. So what do we do trying to cast a net to capture those people is we have a monthly sort of a seminar series, if you will. It's a meeting put up by the data team. And then they will present a different topics, the project that's working on, just kind of see who shows up. I think within a year, we've gone from 20 something people to 60 now. Every month, we're just broadcasting agenda. So whenever wants to come, you come. And those people who consistently coming self-identifies as early adopters. Okay. Or quick learners, whatever you call them. So then you're trying to give them something, not just listening in, they start trying things on their own. Mm-hmm. And then that will get them even more sort of tangled into it. That takes me to the second point. For a lot of other people who, not that they resist this change, they're skeptical, right? Scientists is by nature skeptical of anything you tell me. You know, show me the money. Is by small and agile examples of a success. Okay. So that's maybe another lesson we learn is do not, when you pick the first pilot batch of project to demonstrate what the machine learning can do, do not pick the hardest problem you're going to solve. Pick the low-hanging fruit to be able to, in the short period of time, couple months, 2 months, 3 months, truly demonstrate how powerful these tools are, what they can do with real money that makes the convert more than anything else. I think that's sort of what we're trying. We're still trying. I'm not saying we're there, but those are the two things really can make a believer out of it. Yeah.
And I thank you for that. And I have one other separate question. How much is your data management team linked to your IT team? Is the data management group sits in the IT group or is it in the technical group?
Oh, that's actually a good question, Laura. I don't even know where they sit. It probably sits everywhere. So yeah, we have a team governs our corporate cloud database.
Okay.
And then that team, I don't know where the organization would sit, but the, on that team, there are people who from our digital organization, there are people from IT. Mm-hmm. Definitely there are people from IT. So regardless organization or where they sit, that's their key, besides their users, right? Their mm-hmm. users. So I actually really don't know where they sit, but if I look at my own project, almost on any project, you have those cohorts. You have the data team, you have the digital data science team, you have the IT, which have to build those things whenever you have to launch, right? Interface, user interfaces. So those three components are always there and they have to work together to make anything we work on successful. But that's a good question. Now you got my curiosity. I'm going to find out where the data team reports to. I'll be on the meetings with them plenty of time. Maybe Kevin Gallagher, who's on the call, can type into chat if you know the answer. I don't know where that data team reports into.
Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Hey, Nelson.
Hello.
Hey, Nelson.
Hi, Sharon. I just had a quick comment. I think everything that you've said in the first half hour introducing the topic really resonated. It's been a similar experience that I had with the adoption, as well as all the difficulties with trying to convince everyone to do, especially scientists, to do a minimum viable product. So that was a great discussion. I also really liked the question from Laura about how to get the adoption up. Because I know I've looked at things like electronic notebooks in the past and, talking to vendors a lot, one of the things they talked about was the, adoption profile. You have your early adopters and then your lagging, and then you have your active resistors. And so sounds like everyone's facing similar problems with the digital transformation. So it's really interesting talk. Could you talk a little bit more about how you're approaching your, citizen data scientists that you talked about and that type of initiative?
Yeah, so it's earlier. We launched the, we're in April, we launched that beginning of this year. And then we started with that group I talked about. Those people started consistently, 60 of them, every month comes to these seminar series. We have their names, right? So we know they don't come if they are not interested or they're vastly interested. So that we pushed out a group of training modules that we tell them what is the module for yellow belt, for green belt, for black belt. And then we actually let them self-select what courses they wanted to take and how they wanted to get involved in project. And that's been going on. That's been, I would say that the success is not even. There are people who will self-nominate, step in, but everybody's so busy also. So we actually have sometimes project we need people, but those people who want to do it don't have time. Then you started to work with their supervisor or the next level leadership to say, hey, I know everybody has their plates full, but this is investment for the future. So is there any way we can work together? But also let them know, if we do this for, let's say for their group, their efficiency is gonna be so much higher that they will empty out the bandwidths they need it. It's a chicken egg thing. It's like, do I have time to improve? You all see that cartoon, right? Somebody is pulling a car with a square wheel. And then somebody have a round wheel says, why don't you put this on? That will make your life so much easier. The guy said, I don't have time to put the round wheel on. I have to pull the square wheel car, right? So that is exactly the chicken and egg thing, that you just have to be persistent. So we actually have a way in when we launch Lens or some other larger digital initiative, we actually designate management of change champions. Those are people's time, set 40% of your time or 20% of your time, next 6 months. You are the champion for management of change. That is working with practitioners, the users on the floor to see what keeps them not adapting. And you have to have these people. These are really good resources needed to make the adoption actually stick. Let's put it that way. You can't be you build it, they will come. You will put in there whenever you put in the tools. If they don't use it, it's a moot point. So we started adapt. Actually, our IT group has a dedicated management of change group. There's quite a number of people. That's their specialty. Actually, these people, just like a product management, a project management, they can get a certificate. I didn't know that before either. You can get management of change certificate. There are special skills, tools you can use. Now, these have to be people. Okay, you know that, right? So yeah. they work with people all the time because that's the hardest to say. It's not the tool, it's the people. So I think that has been a really good model to have designated management of change champions.
Okay. Now, are you also focusing on coding? Because I know, a lot of true data scientists, it's R and Python. Is that the approach that you're taking, or are you taking like another software?
No, so it's interesting. We have both. So I think for science, technology, digital team, we are actually people with data science know-how, but with material chemistry, chemie background. So these people you hire actually from like a chemie department, but their thesis will be machine learning. So those are the type really works for science, technology function, but we do have our digital corporate organization. Now, those are the people are coming from computer science degree with, those are bona fide, really just, but the thing is you need both because you do need some appreciation of the domain knowledge to make your tool work. So we work together a lot of times. The true data scientist group, their competency or their specialty is really to scale. So we develop prototype. They will take the prototype to make into user interface, and then they can scale launch to 50 different locations whenever they manage all the bells, whistles in the network, whenever. Now those are kind of we are out of league. But our sweet spot is to have those data scientists has chemistry or engineering or material science background. That worked well for us, yeah.
Great, thank you. Thank you for the detailed answer. It was very enlightening.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Nelson. So we had a question come into the chat, Sharon. So what were some quick wins / low-hanging fruit you were not expecting when you started this initiative? So you mentioned those quick wins to bring people on board. What were some ones that you didn't think that you didn't anticipate?
Oh, okay. This is a really good question. So they were asking whether I found that unexpected golden trophy somewhere in the space. We're not there. No, we haven't discovered anything that's totally surprising for us and then, gone out and made $100 million for us. No, we haven't got there. Not that I don't think we will get there. Who knows? But that's what the big pharma do, right? They're trying to run 10,000 compounds through it, see which one hit the target. But we're not small molecule play, so we don't have that straightforward process. We can't screen those yet. So that's the hope. But as you guys know, we are a coatings company. So if you look at the coatings, you can do three layers of data science. One is strictly pattern recognition. These are the type of coatings that has really good weatherability, really good hardness, counter corrosion, but it doesn't go on to next level why they are, right? They just say, okay, this is 50 formulation, and among those, these 10 are the best because the algorithm says so. So that's more of a pattern recognition. That's actually most of the true data science stuff these days. They don't really go on to the next level of why and how, but we are scientists, so we don't stop there. So you can go to the next layer to say, okay, not only I know those 10 are good for anti-corrosion, I know all 10 of them has one ingredient in common. Then you can say, oh, okay. So that's another layer deeper than just a pattern recognition. You get into somewhat ingredient, you know, component issue. And then the highest level, which a lot of universities are doing, go down to the molecular level. Right? Not only that's the ingredient, I know exactly which bond, which functional group on that molecule is responsible for this. Now, that's the highest level. Hopefully we all could go there, but I think the challenge to go to that highest level, especially in system we deal with, which is a polymeric system, very complex, is you don't even have all the computing power. Doesn't matter where you go, you can go to Argonne for supercomputing. You probably don't have computing power you needed to calculate every bonds in the molecule we work with. So, but hopefully we'll get there on the highest level. But right now we are more sort of still on the very basic level. We do project based on criteria we select, whether they will significantly solving our own pain point in our own process. If there is a test takes too long, I can solve that using machine learning, or whether it's impactful, or whether it's something that we have data to do. So if you meet those three criteria, you get to run that project. So out of that project, usually there's no surprises. Not the result could be surprised, but the impact is what we predicted. Yeah.
All right, the questions are rolling in.
Oh, you're just getting warmed up.
Exactly. You thought you were going to be done after an hour.
I know. I was looking at the clock. I'm like, almost done.
So another one that's coming is upfront costs can sometimes be perceived as a barrier to pursuing these initiatives. Were there any surprises, positive or negative, you experienced related to cost as you've gone through this journey?
Yeah. This is a really excellent question. We couldn't have taken on this journey if without the total commitment from the top. I'm talking about the board, the CEO, the C-suites, everybody bought into this. Otherwise, yeah, there are lots of costs, whether it's in infrastructure, IT, whether it's in people. I mean, a lot of what we don't usually have hundreds of data scientists, right? So I think that is definitely a commitment, and also understanding not everything we try, even with that commitment, will be successful, right? I mean, there's no way everything's successful. So sure, there are things we hoped will deliver a certain amount of returns, did not pan out, but we have very robust post-launch reviews. So I think at least for our executive, we're fortunate. They said, okay, nobody is perfect. You're allowed to fail, but you're not allowed to fail without learning. So we do post-launch. We really look at why we fail. Is it a wrong business case or value proposition? Is it execution? Is it a skill set? You know, so hopefully the more we do these, the less failures we'll have because we hopefully learn and apply those learnings.
Okay, and kind of related to that, so another question that's come in. So you mentioned speed to market is one of the key drivers. What is your estimate for speed to market improvements? How do you measure the improvement, and how do you measure or estimate the value of that speed to market improvement?
Wow, we can write the thesis on that question. That's a really good question. So what we do, at least, we're early in the journey. How do we pick a process or a workflow or even a product to apply this approach and can demonstrate speed to market? So what we're trying to do is find out, I mean, simply, like, where is the bottleneck? Where is the rate determining step in your entire process of developing new product? Let's take that way. And in our field, I can tell you the longest always was testing. I mean, you have to put the panel on Florida for 2 years. I don't know how you can speed that up. I mean, that's not even the longest. If you want to put anything on the ship, you're going to put that raft in the ocean for like 18 to 36 months. Usually that cycle is like 4 years. So there are certain things we identify as extremely long pain point. But of course, you cannot replace these real life testing. But what we can do is to shrinking the screening stage. Because you can imagine, if we don't have any help, we just do it in the lab. You're going to run 28 panels, put on the Florida for 2 years, come back, says, whoops, doesn't work. So you're going to put another 28 panels. I mean, I'm exaggerating. So if you can use the screenings in the screening process, you'll have these predictive model can tell you, say, don't even go there. This one doesn't work. I can tell you this one, you don't need to put on the rack. It's going to fail. Then you can quickly go back to lab, say, okay, let's alternate, let's pivot. And so you can shrinking that screening period significantly. That's one. The second one, you could think about it. This is a little bit outside the R&D line. Even in just production, right? You have batches going through a certain production procedure. You take samples here, see if the reaction is going the right way. You take samples here, each samples. If not, you have to adjust. If you actually could apply machine learning in that entire process to say, you can almost predict if the parameter is this way, the outcome is that way. So you can already ahead of time say, I'm going to adjust here. So you don't need it to go down that wrong direction, you're trying to drag it back. So the cycle time can be significantly improved using just those are the two examples. But certainly, you know, again, we're going to continue that journey to say, what is value? These are all sounded great, but is that time value to whom and what kind of value you bring back, but also important, does that return on your initial investment? We're not late enough to do that full assessment, but it's something we're going to have to do, yeah.
All right. Sharon, this has been absolutely fantastic. I so appreciate you taking the time and answering the questions today. I could listen to you all day, but I know you've got a conference you're running off to. So thank you so much for accommodating us and for joining us and for being so open. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for giving me this opportunity to have the dialogue. I really hope to hear from more of people on the line. If they have a really good idea, please let me know. We're still learning how to do this.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Sharon. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Everyone. Oh, and join me next month on May 19th. I'll be interviewing Mickey McManus. He was with Carnegie Mellon, Autodesk, and now he's with BCG, and he's going to talk about stuff that's a bit into the future. So making machine and human teams work well together and generative design. It's going to be really cool. So join me next month.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.